The following message comes to you from the pulpit of Zion Primitive Baptist Church in Zion, Alabama. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.
I want to welcome you today to the Zion Primitive Baptist Church podcast. This podcast is an outreach of Zion Primitive Baptist Church, which is located in the Zion community near Gordo, Alabama. I'm Elder Chris McCool, and I serve as pastor of Zion Primitive Baptist Church. We are a congregation of believers in the sovereign grace of God, where families worship together through the simple practice of preaching, praying, and singing. If you live in this area or are visiting here, we would love to have you attend worship services with us. We meet every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. and every Sunday evening at 5 p.m. and the first and third Wednesday evenings at 6:30 p.m. I'm happy to note that our daily podcast is featured on Grace Alone Radio, which you can find at gracealoneradio.net. You can find the schedule on the website, and you can also download an app to your phone so that you can listen wherever you are. Grace Alone Radio is a 24-hour streaming service which carries the message of God's sovereign grace around the clock and around the world. Zion Primitive Baptist Church is located at 9487 County Road 49, Gordo, Alabama. That's near the intersection of County Road 49 and Alabama Highway 159, about 8 miles north of Gordo, Alabama, and about 10 miles northeast of Reform, Alabama. If you're interested in finding more sermons, you can go to our website at zionpbc.com. That's zionpbc.com, where you'll find all of our posted sermons, as well as a link to subscribe to our podcast. You can also subscribe to our website, which will update you every time a new sermon is posted. As we continue looking at the Hall of Faith, we now come to verses 20 through 22, which talk about Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph at the end of their lives. The most extreme version of faith is the faith that we exhibit in dying. In today's message, we begin looking at the faith of these three patriarchs as they approach the end of their lives. Each man's faith was different. Isaac's was a complicated faith. Jacob's was a conflicted faith. And Joseph's was a continuing faith. But each man ultimately had faith in God, even in the face of circumstances that seemed contrary to the promises of God. Join us today as we begin looking at the faith that these three patriarchs exercised at the end of their lives. First, we have a song selection that we hope you enjoy, and then please stay tuned for the message.
Faith can create, all truth we know, our trust, our truth
Tonight, I want to go back to the book of Hebrews, the 11th chapter. We have been looking in Hebrews at the hall of faith here in the 11th chapter. We are seeing examples of faithful men and faithful women who lived in times past and have demonstrated and lived out the faith that is talked about there as we see the beginning of the chapter. In the beginning of the chapter, we read the definition of faith. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. You know, that's a pretty important definition because that tells us that faith is real. It's not just fleeting, wispy, wishful thinking. It is a substantive evidence of the things that we can't see with our eyes, but that we can see by the eye of faith. Of course, we know that only those that have been born again have faith. Paul tells the Thessalonians over there, all men have not faith. Only those that have been born of the Spirit have faith, because faith in Galatians chapter 5 and verse 22 is one of the aspects of the fruit of the Spirit. So you got to have the Spirit in order to have faith. So you find people who are faithful, then you know they have the Spirit. But we've been talking about some of the ways that men and women lived out the faith in their lives from the Old Testament. We've come down now to the 20th verse, and we're going to read verses 20, 21, and 22 tonight and try to preach to you from these verses about dying faith. Dying faith. Verse 20, by faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. By faith Jacob, when he was a dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph and worshiped, leaning upon the top of his staff. By faith Joseph, when he died, made mention of the departing of the children of Israel and gave commandment concerning his bones. Now, I think we would all agree that the most extreme example of faith in action is the faith that we exhibit when we're at the point of death. When we come to the point of dying, the faith that we exercise then is the acid test of our faith, so to speak. Now, let me just say this, and I may repeat it later in the message. Just because somebody at the end of their life doesn't act out faith or doesn't peacefully pass from this world clinging openly and actively to the faith, to the promises of God, does not mean they're not a child of God. You know, there are a lot of people, you hear about dying grace. Well, I believe the Lord gives us that in many instances, but that doesn't mean that everyone's passing is going to be easy. I knew a man at one point who was a preacher of another faith and another order, but due to some mental incapacities that he experienced, by the time he got to the point of death, he was cursing and swearing and saying things that were just totally exhibited no faith. And his son, who I knew, I tried to reassure him, that doesn't mean that he was not a child of God. Because sometimes the flesh, even in death, will overtake us. And Brother Buddy's preached many times about this. You know, one of the things we understand as Primitive Baptists is that the battle is for the mind and not the heart. So I'm so thankful I have at least enough presence of mind right now not to say everything I'm thinking. And if you ever hear that old Brother Chris has lost his mind, please don't come to see me. I don't want you to hear all that stuff I'm thinking, okay? There's a lot of wicked things going through my mind that I can control it now. It's an exercise of the will to have faith. See, faith is not something that just pops up. Faith is it's like a muscle. You have to exercise it. Faith is given to us in the new birth. It's a gift of God. But like every gift of God, if you don't exercise it, it just stagnates. You know, I know people, and we read about some of them in the scriptures, that they never had any more faith than that which they were given in the new birth. Think about Lot. Lot was a man who had been given faith. He had been born of the Spirit. He was a just man. We're told in the book of Peter, book of 1 Peter, I believe it is. But Lot doesn't act like he had any more faith than anybody else there in Sodom. He looks just like he had, you know, he took that gift and he buried it in the ground. Like the man who took the one talent, he buried it in the ground. And he never grew it. He never exercised it. So faith is something that must be exercised. But the most extreme example, the acid taste test of our faith, so to speak, is what where we are and how we think at our death. You know, Paul made the statement in Philippians that he was confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. And you read about in the book of Timothy how he said, I'm ready to be offered. I've fought a good fight. You know, my time is at hand. And he held on to his faith. Now, all three of the characters we've read about here, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, relied upon God to a greater or lesser extent as they neared the end of their lives. And in each case, they demonstrated faith in God's promises when the circumstances seemed to contradict their promises. And we're going to see the most extreme contradiction, the circumstance that seems to contradict the most against the promises of God is death itself. I mean, think about it. You have all the promises that you read, and yet still you're coming up against death. And it would be so easy to say, well, my death will extinguish the promises of God. But that's not what faith says. Faith understands that the promises of God pierce the veil of death. That's why it's an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast. So we're going to see as we look at these three verses that, as I said, these three characters, Isaac and Jacob and Joseph, reference faith at the end of their lives in the things to come. So let's start out with Isaac here in verse 20. It says, by faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. Now Isaac's faith, as I look at it, was a complicated faith. I mean, he definitely had faith, but you know, it was more subtle in some ways and maybe not manifest as strongly as Abraham's faith. You know, God didn't call Isaac out of a pagan land and he picked up and went. Abraham did that. But he had Isaac after he came into the land of promise. He was already in the land of promise when Isaac was born. You know, he didn't call Isaac to go back and find a wife. Abraham's servant did that. Okay, but now, not to denigrate his faith, because Isaac did receive his wife Rebekah by faith. You'll recall that he loved her from the moment he saw her. She lit off of her horse and ran to him, and he took her to be his wife. So Isaac received his wife Rebekah by faith. Isaac redug all those wells that had been filled in by faith. Okay? Isaac sojourned in the land of promise by faith. We read about him already that you know, Isaac had a great faith early in his life when he was taken up on the mountain. Because we think about Abraham's faith, but Isaac's faith was manifest there too. Abraham was the one God said, go slay your son. But Isaac was the one to be slain. And he was old enough to fight. I don't believe that Abraham had the ability to just wrestle him down and tie him up. I believe Isaac willingly laid himself down on that altar, trusting God to deliver him. So his faith was more subtle than Abraham's faith, but it was true faith nonetheless. But as he entered the waning years of his life, it seems like maybe his faith wasn't quite as strong as Abraham's was. Back over in Genesis chapter 27, which is what's referenced here in the book of Hebrews, we read about what happened when time came to bless Jacob and Esau. We're told in verse 1 that Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, and he called Esau so that he could bless him and give him the birthright. Now, we're not told explicitly that Rebekah shared God's promise that God had made to her about Jacob being ruling over Esau. But I think it's almost goes without question that Isaac knew about that, that Isaac understood that God had spoken to Rebekah. See, God had told Rebekah that Jacob was to be the heir. He was to get the birthright. And I believe Isaac knew about it. Maybe he didn't understand all the implications. Maybe he didn't know what all that meant. Either way, whatever it was, I don't know what the situation was, he favored Esau. Esau was his favorite. And let me just say, it's never a good idea to play favorites in the family. What we're going to read about, if you keep reading in the book of Genesis, you're going to read about his son Jacob playing favorites and the disastrous results that led to. So anyway, you know the story. Jacob dressed up like Esau. He tricked Isaac with the help of Rebekah, and Isaac blessed him and gave him the birthright. In verse 28 here, it says that he gave the blessing of the firstborn to him. Verse 28, it says, "Therefore God give thee of the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth and plenty of corn and wine. Let people serve thee and nations bow down to thee. Be Lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be everyone that curseth thee, and blessed be he that blesseth thee." Now, here is Isaac giving that blessing to Jacob, the blessing of the firstborn, which by rights under the law of that day should have gone to Esau, but he was tricked into doing it. So how does this implicate Isaac's faith? Because remember what Hebrews said. It says, "By faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come." Well, for one thing, Isaac's faith, while it might have been waning or it might have been a little weaker, I don't know exactly even how to evaluate his faith, except to say that it was complicated, okay? Isaac's faith nonetheless appeared to trust in the future promises of God. Because first of all, if you go on down to verse 33, after Esau comes in, we're back in Genesis 27 now, after Esau comes in and says, "Wait a minute, that was Jacob, not me." It says, "Isaac trembled exceedingly and said, where is he that hath taken venison and brought it me? And I have eaten of all before thou camest and have blessed him. Yea, and he shall be blessed." Notice that here, Isaac was not a man to waver in his promises and in his blessings. He didn't say, "Oh, wait a minute, time out. I got to go back and unbless him, and I'm going to take the blessing away from him and bless you now." He didn't revoke the blessing on Jacob. He says, "Yea, he shall be blessed." He told Esau, "I have made my covenant. I have made my promise. I have laid my blessing upon him." And basically, it's too late, son. But clearly, as we keep going, we're going to see that Isaac's faith, he trusted God to take care of the matter. He ultimately trusted God to take care of the matter. See, there were some future promises that God had made. If you look over in verse 1 of chapter 28 of Genesis, we're told that after all this had transpired, Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said unto him, "Thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, thy mother's father, and take thee a wife from thence of the daughters of Laban, thy mother's brother, and God Almighty bless thee and make thee fruitful and multiply thee, that thou mayest be a multitude of people, and give thee the blessing of Abraham to thee and to thy seed with thee, that thou mayest inherit the land wherein thou art a stranger, which God gave unto Abraham." Notice what he's done here. Isaac has accepted the fact that Jacob is the heir of the gospel promises, because that's the gospel promise. You go over to Galatians chapter 3, and I believe it is verse 8, that when God told Abraham, "In thee shall all the nations of the earth be blessed," that was the gospel being preached to Abraham, according to Paul. And ultimately, he must have accepted what Rebekah told him that God had said. Look back over in Genesis 25 just for a second. And look at verse 23. "The Lord said unto her, while the children were struggling within her womb." Remember, Jacob and Esau were twins. "And the Lord said unto her," verse 23, "two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger." We know that that's a reference to the eternal covenant of God, because Romans chapter 9 tells us it is. Over in Romans chapter 9, you can turn there and read it sometime. It says, "Jacob have I loved and Esau have I hated." It quotes this very statement here. It says, "The elder shall serve the younger." This is the gospel preached to Abraham. This is the gospel preached to Rebekah. This is the gospel preached to Isaac. And Isaac's faith, even though it was complicated, nonetheless shows that he trusted in the future promises of God. And see, for us, what does this do? Why does the Hebrews writer cite Abraham's blessing of Isaac and Jacob? He wants us to go back and read it. Because number one, it tells us about the eternal covenant of God. that Jacob would be two manner of people, that one manner of people would be God's people, the other manner would not be God's people. There are the people of God on this earth today. There are those that aren't. But beloved, God's people will be blessed. Ultimately, they will rule over those that are not God's people. They will be blessed in ways eternally that they could never imagine. And secondly, it reminds us to trust God even when circumstances seem to contradict his promises. You know, you think about what a mess. Think about what's going on here. This is just, you talk about a dysfunctional family. This is the most dysfunctional of all dysfunctional families. I mean, you're going to keep reading about them. If you read about them, you'll see that Esau tried to kill Jacob. Jacob had to flee. Jacob was going to get away. And also remember this. These were children of God here primarily. I believe Rebekah and Isaac and Jacob. I know Esau wasn't. But we know that we believe they were. And even these children of God persisted in sin in many ways. I don't think for a minute that Rebekah's desire was to honor God by dressing her son up like Esau and tricking Isaac into giving him the blessing. I mean, she was trying to help out God, like Abraham tried to help out God and Sarah did when he went in under the handmaid, you see. If we're not careful, we may look at the sinfulness of the characters, of those actors in whatever situation we're in, and say to ourselves, there's just no way the gospel promises will ever be fulfilled or that the church could ever bring glory to God's name. We've been so blessed here, Brother Mackey. We've not had a split. We've not had anger. We've not had things that tore our church up. But there's churches that have been torn apart by sin, by the sin of its members, by rancor and anger and that sort of thing. And you could look at some of those churches in years past and you think there's just no way. You could look at this church 12, 13 years ago and say, bless her heart, dear sweet old Aunt Lorraine is holding it together, but when she's gone, there's nothing left. There's just no way it could ever. But look at what's happened. The Lord has blessed us to come back, you see. See, faith is most tested when we're looking at circumstances that say it can never work out. But here at the end, I know it doesn't say he's about to die, but he's at the end of his life. He's toward the end of in his waning years. Here at the end of his life, even with all the mix-up and all the mess-up and all the dysfunction, ultimately he says, as we've already read in chapter 28, God Almighty bless thee and give thee the blessing of Abraham. And he trusted that God would do that. Isaac's faith was a complicated faith, but it was faith nonetheless. Well, now, moving on, let's look at verse 21, and we're going to see Jacob's conflicted faith. By faith, Jacob, when he was a-dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph and worshiped, leaning upon the top of his staff. Jacob had a very conflicted faith. Jacob was a rascal. Jacob's very name means supplanter. He was a schemer. He was a deceiver. You read about his life. How did he demonstrate faith? Well, the truth is he didn't demonstrate much faith through the early years of his life. And in fact, I believe if you look at the time when he took advantage of Esau, when he was starving. You go back to chapter 25, you'll read about that. And he tricked him out of the birthright. He lied to his father in chapter 27 about his birthright. He schemed to steal it. And God had already told his mother that he was to be the heir, but he was going to help God out. And the truth of the matter is, I believe Jacob had not been born again at that point anyway. Because it appears to me that on over in chapter 28, when he's laying there with a stone for his pillow there at Bethel, that's the point where God approached him and born him again, you see. But even after his encounter with God at Bethel, he lived a life of deceit and trickery. He didn't deal right with his family. He didn't deal right with his wives' families. He didn't deal right with his own family. He was afraid of Esau. If you go over to chapter 32, you'll read about him even wrestling with God at Peniel. He wrestled with God there. He lost his son Joseph. His son Joseph was taken for him. And listen, turn with me over. Let's skip several chapters and turn over to chapter 47. I want you to read out of his own mouth his pitiful summation of his life up to the point where he met Pharaoh. Remember now, at this point in chapter 47, Jacob has finally been told that Joseph is still living. Joseph is second in command in Egypt, and Joseph has brought his father and all of his brothers and their families over to Egypt. And now Pharaoh is to meet Jacob. And down in verse 8 of chapter 47, Pharaoh said unto Jacob, "How old art thou?" And he just asked him how old he was. But notice poor mouthing Jacob here. He said unto Pharaoh, "The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and have not attained unto the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their pilgrimage." Now, what is he saying here? He's saying, poor pitiful me. That doesn't sound like much of a faithful statement. He's 130 years old. I mean, that's a blessing in and of itself, that he's 130 and still got the health that he has. But his pitiful summation of his own life to this point is that the 130 years that I've lived here, Pharaoh, have been evil years. Few and evil. They're just not many years, and they're very evil, and there's nothing compared to my father's. I'm just a sorry, pitiful, afflicted individual. That's me. See, his faith was constantly failing all the way up to that point. He would just constantly trying to work it out.
Due to the constraints of time, we will stop the message here. But please join us tomorrow for the conclusion of this message. If you would like to subscribe to our website, please go to www.zionpbc.com and sign up for email updates. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact the church at zionpbc1847@gmail.com. That's zionpbc1847@gmail.com. Or you can email me directly at jchrismccool@gmail.com. That's the letter J, chrismccool@gmail.com. Again, thank you for listening. May the Lord bless you is my prayer.
We thank you for listening to today's message. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.